Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 183, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode183. Alrighty now. So today we have a production case study. I love these. I love hearing about how a director chooses a show, approaches a show, rehearses a show. And this is a great one. We have drama teacher Lee Marshall, who directed To Kill a Mockingbird this year. And we're going to get into it. Soup to nuts. Vision to marketing. How do you visually represent a theme? She has some awesome ideas, and you are going to want to take notes. So let's get to it. Hello, everybody. Today I'm so happy. I can't wait to have this conversation with Lee Marshall. Hello, Lee.
Hello.
And Lee, tell everybody where you are in the world.
I am in my playroom at home. Oh, you meant more exact. I am on the couch in my yoga pants because my show is over. Oh, isn't that happy? Do we really need to know more than that?
Nope.
My show is over and I'm on a Saturday. I took a nap. Is there anything else we need to know? I'm in Tallahassee, Florida, and this is my first year as a high school theater teacher. I was a middle school theater teacher and then moved to the high school this year. And at Leon High School is the name of my high school in Tallahassee, Florida.
Awesome. No, I think everyone, as soon as you said, I closed the show, so I'm in my yoga pants. A crowd, a chorus of agreement, I'm sure, just went rocked the internet, you know?
Yes. So only time I would have time to do a podcast is because my show closed last weekend.
Exactly. So. And that's what we're here to talk about. We are here. So you just closed the show To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes. Or as several students, The Killer Mockingbirds. I was like, nope, that's not the name of it. Nope.
That's a band. That's not a show. And, you know, so that's what we're here to talk about. We're doing like it's like a case study, Lee. Yeah. Well, all you have to do is, it's pretty easy on your end. All you have to do is just talk about what you did. And if your brain is still, you know, if you've still got it.
You can have whatever is left of my brain.
You're sweet. You're the best. So my first question is, why this show? Why To Kill a Mockingbird?
During the summer, I was taking over this high school theater job. And during the summer, I was really thinking about kind of an overarching theme for our year. I'm very thematic. And it comes from having taught preschool and having to teach in themes once years ago. So I really thought about what I needed this year as a theme and what I thought the kids needed as a theme and what I thought the world needed as a theme. I'm so bold. What the world needs from my high school theater program. So this summer when a lot of the news was very fearful, I felt like last summer, I'm not sure it'll be different this summer, but I felt like a lot of people were reacting in fear versus acting in love. And I thought that's what I wanted to do taking over this program. I could react in fear of these kids not liking me or, you know, comparing me to their old theater teacher, or I could act in love, and I wanted to act in love. And I wanted that for them too. They could react in fear. The program was changing in a lot of ways and there was a new teacher, or they could act in love toward me. So that was our season. And we did Antigone in the fall, a play that is very much about reacting in fear versus some characters that act in love. And then To Kill a Mockingbird, I thought there's just not a better example of characters that react in fear to what is happening in the world around them. And then, of course, Atticus Finch, who acts in love and tries to raise his children that way. And so that was my choice for that. I thought it was time for To Kill a Mockingbird. And obviously, I'm not the only one, because I read just a couple of months ago that it's coming to Broadway for the first time ever.
First time ever?
First time ever. I thought that was weird too, but I swear I read that. Let's fact check. Where's my fact checker? Where's our Drama Teacher Academy fact checker? First time ever is what I read. I could be wrong about that, but it's coming in. Aaron Sorkin is doing the new edition of it. It will not be the one that I did or the Christopher Sergel that has been the play, but he's doing a new edition of it. So it's coming soon. And I guess so obviously they were watching us to see what I would choose. And so it's coming to Broadway because I think it's definitely time to look at racism again, and not that we ever stop looking at it, but it was interesting. I also was in charge with the Black History Month assembly at our school, which happened in February before Mockingbird. And so that happening at the same time and me culling pieces for that while doing Mockingbird was really a great experience for me and a great thought process to go through as I was actually co-directing Mockingbird. One of the things I did early on was reach out to a friend of mine who had never directed anything before, but I knew had been in a lot of different shows. I did not know that he had been in To Kill a Mockingbird a couple years ago, but a great African-American young friend of mine, Kafui Abler-Duppy is his name. Try and spell that, theater folk, on the podcast. And he helped co-direct it with me. And so I needed that voice with me because he had experiences that I did not, that could speak to Mockingbird. And I thought it was great to have a partnership on it. So that was why I chose that and kind of my thought process at the beginning of that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, having a theme for the year, I think, is something to absolutely highlight. Like, it's a really great way to kind of like cull down the amount of plays you might want to read in, you know, over your summer break, as if you kind of identify what it is that you want to present thematically, it just helps you out. It must help you.
And what you want to focus on, because there's so many things you could focus on in Antigone, so many things you could focus on in To Kill a Mockingbird. And so that fear versus love kind of became a real jumping off point for, you know, not only the set, but just our focus for it, our direction that we took the play in to give it our own little concept. So,
yeah, well, because that's the next thing is that, you know, once you have this play, you know, what is your vision? What is your direction that you're going to take with it? And having fear versus love. So my next question is, I have many questions, but just because you just talked about that. So I love the idea of taking, and I think it's really important, then once you have a theme that you're moving forward with, or a vision you're moving forward with a play, finding ways to visually represent it, like in a set. So what were your thoughts on taking fear versus love visually?
Well, I did a podcast with you at maybe my first year teaching, and we talked about maybe doing first play. I don't remember what the concept of the podcast was, but I talked about how I decided to kind of major in one thing, time.
I think it was lighting we were talking. You were majoring in lighting that year.
Yes. I think it was set design. Actually, I think it was set design.
Okay.
Because I feel like I got really good at it. I don't want to pat myself on the back, but you're not here to do it. So I'll pat myself. Anyway, I really was able to kind of capture some things in my set this year that the students really loved, the audience really loved. We put in the program kind of a set design kind of overview. And one of the things that I did that was my jumping off point. I wanted to visually represent some things from the book on my set. And one of them was I did this book tree. And so I had asked our community and my school to donate any books that were not needed anymore, were destined for the dump, or, you know, because they would not be able to be read afterwards. And a lot of people donated old. And I wanted specifically hardback factual books, encyclopedias, old textbooks, that kind of thing, and then fiction paperback books. And so I wanted to make this tree out of the books. And the hardback factual books were the base, the trunk of the tree, all hooked up with a cable together with a big hole drilled in the middle of them. And some of them had to have the pages ripped out and foam put in just for, you know, I love being a set designer. I don't so much love being a have to make it part, but we figured it out and did that. And that was the base of the tree, and the top of the tree was the canopy was these hand painted green paperback books hung from the battens. And it was just beautiful. And the idea was, I told my students that this is a story that is a fictional story based on some factual events. And there are actually three events that probably Harper Lee would have heard of in her time that mimicked a little bit the Tom Robinson case. And so we can't ever forget that the trunk of this story is this story is supported by fact. And so the fictional is this, you know, green leafy expanse. And I had some great lighting, a girl that did my lighting design for me, a high schooler who lit up that tree in some really beautiful ways so that it looked, you know, the leaves looked more plentiful at times for one season and then, you know, fall colors in another and then backlit it. And that's where Bob Ewell got killed by, I mean, he fell on his own knife. We all know that. But that's where he fell on his own knife with Boo Radley standing right over him, backlit. And so it just made this beautiful kind of jumping off point for everything else. And another thing I did for the set was the houses didn't have walls. There's a great quote that Atticus Finch is the same in the streets as he is in his own home. And we talked about how we can't be one way. No man is an island. That poem by John Donne, I love and read it for the kids, that we can't be one way in our own home and not expect it to affect our community, which is very much, you know, ensemble work. We had some drama during the play, like, you know, you always do backstage kind of stuff. And, you know, I talked a lot with the kids that if we have this dissension between just a couple of people in the show, it will affect the whole community, much like To Kill a Mockingbird. And so we need to act in love instead of reacting in fear that maybe somebody else got a part that we wanted or somebody wasn't at rehearsal a couple times in there, you know, that kind of thing. So my houses didn't have walls, just this idea that as individuals, we affect the community. And I mean, we need each other. Ms. DuBose needs Jim to come, but you know, into her walls and in to help her not recover, but get over this, you know, this very painful time for her so that she can beat her addiction. And we need Boo Radley to come out behind the walls that we think we have trapped him in because we're afraid of him, because he's going to act in love and he's going to rescue these children. So that was another kind of set concept. And then probably one of my favorite things that I did was I asked the Leon, my high school through listserv, to if anybody had 1930s furniture. All my furniture was antiques. And it just was culled from people's homes. People said, yes, come and look and pick out what you want. And then my actual cast sets up the courtroom right there in the middle of the street in front of Atticus's house. And then they sit on the porches and the furniture is very, it doesn't match at all. It looks like it's come from, you know, one piece from somebody's house, one piece from another. The chairs don't match. But the idea that when we sit in judgment of people, we are sitting on our neighbor's furniture. You know, the courtroom is not this place of legality and perfection, but it's a living room. It's a family room. It's a front porch. And we are sitting in judgment. You know, what happens in that courtroom happens in people's family rooms and neighborhoods and porches. And so we were able to talk through a lot of fear versus love as we talked through those set choices with the students. And I just loved that set. I almost cried when they took it down, except that my play was over and I knew I'd get to put on my yoga pants. So that was redeeming for me.
Wow,
so
there's balance in everything, right? You know?
Yes, yes.
The set goes away.
Yeah.
The couch beckons.
Yeah.
First of all, I think that what you're talking about, I think the thing that hits home to me so much is how important it is to have a vision, you know, because it answers every question every student might have. It answers mm-hmm. every set question anybody might have. It even seems to have bled into issues that the actors are having with each other,
yes.
You know?
It really did. It really did help us to, it was so funny. I told the kids with Antigone, there was an issue that came up and I said, we're just, actually a student said it was not me. One of the cast members said, we're not trusting each other. We're not listening to each other. And I was like, that's the point of Antigone. And then I said, and then with Mockingbird, the same thing was happening. We thought we could harbor these individual thoughts of, I think you cast that role badly, or I think I should have been this, you know, and that not affect the community. No, what we think in private affects the community. What we whisper, you know, when we're in the back of the theater, chatty about the show, affects our ensemble. And so it's very interesting to me. It'll be interesting to see as I go on as a director, if the very lesson of the show does not show up in some way in a lesson that we need to learn as a cast and crew and director during the show. I just find that fascinating how that's happened two times, and I'm pretty sure it'll happen again.
So you had a co-director help you with the piece specifically for, well, I'm sure lots of reasons, but a voice that you wanted heard.
Right. When I was reading it over this summer, you know, I got a little of, again, fear. I got a little afraid of the language. I got a little afraid of standing up in front of these kids and saying, you know, the word that's so controversial in it, the N word. And I just thought, I don't know if I can do that from my, you know, from my limited experience and everything. And so I called Kafui and talked to him, and he, you know, and we talked about it. And I talked to a professor at FSU about, you know, why it's in there and why it has to be and why we have to do it this way. So I felt like I needed to act out instead of reacting in fear. I needed to act out in love and reach out and bring somebody else into this that could speak to that, could speak to that perspective. And I had no idea he'd played Tom Robinson in it. And he just turned out to be, in fact, I'm not sure I will ever direct anything on my own again. It was so fabulous to have him as a co-director on this. It was really, it made it so much stronger for it to be a piece that was from both of our perspectives.
And now I think I read that with that language that you weren't allowed to take it out.
Mm-mm. No, in fact, I had to go to my principal and get it signed. I chose the circle version that's a little harsher than the other one because I like the idea that there's not an older scout narrating. It's narrated by Miss Motti, so you keep it all in that one time period. But I understand that one is a little harsher, and yes, you cannot take out one single word from that. And Kafui and I love the text. I am very textual, and I love the words, and I think that every word is in a play for a reason, and we don't, you know, deviate from that. And Kafui is that same way. We worked really hard on our actors being what Kafui called dead letter perfect, which meant that we really called them on the carpet to learn it that way, because of course it's 1935, you know, their language is a little different than ours, even though we're in the South, it was some strange words. And we wanted them to definitely have the language down perfect. For, you know, of course we had to keep those words in, but we didn't think other words needed to be left out either. So we, yes, that version, you definitely have to have all that language in there, and you sign your contract saying that. And I knew that that had to happen.
Oh, but there's so many, you know, I know so many people who are just like, oh, we can't do this, so we're not going to. Like, they don't even, they put their fear, they react in fear, Lee.
Fear. Yes, and I went to my administrator. I mean, we've talked before several times, theater folk, different things about don't let it be a surprise to your administrator. And my administrator, my principal, had to sign off on it. It is required reading for every freshman in our county. So, and it's very, most of, at my school, my English teachers were great. My language arts teachers were finishing up on it the week of the play. So their students, you know, they just really worked well to support me in this. And so because it's required reading in our county, I did not think I would have a problem at all. I put something in the program. I did have a warning about the language and the rape, the sexual assault being mentioned in it on our program. And so I had no backlash at all. I had several homeschool groups that came to see it, and no backlash at all.
Well, there's no surprise, right? It's like,
yes,
you can't backlash me because you knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I quite like that. It's like, look, this is curriculum. This is a curriculum text. Let's not talk about. And I just think that language in period language is really important. We may not like it. I mean, we certainly don't like it, but it's, you're creating a world.
Right. And you have to show the ugliness of it. You have to show it in its darkest ugliness for people to understand why it is offensive. And so I think it had to be there. You have to show that to show the beautiful story. Sometimes you have to show the ugly part of it.
I'm coming across now a lot of teachers, not a lot, some teachers who are saying to me, my students feel uncomfortable. They would never do this. They would never say this. Can we cut it? So how did your students respond to playing perhaps ugly characters, saying ugly things?
You know, it's funny. There's a lot in the text. There's a lot of times it's said from off stage is somebody yelling at Scout and, you know, it, off stage. And it was funny because we would just grab any member of the cast, like, you be boy one and shout that off stage. You be boy two and shout that off stage. So we ended up having a mixture of racially mixed kids doing it from off stage. So it wasn't just one, you know, it was funny. And we, so I think some, you know, doing that off stage and just getting people off stage to play a different character, helped with that. And we did a lot of talking about, this is your character. This is not you. This is your character doing this. This is your 1935 character. And this is what was happening at that time. And really and we just kind of, you know, went straight into that and talked about how words matter. And that's why we do theater, because words matter. And, you know, when you say sticks and stones break my bones, but words will never hurt you, that's a lie. Words do hurt us, and words have power. And so talking about that and talking with the cast about, you know, has anybody ever prejudged you for something, or, you know, said things about you that were really hurtful? So talking through that in the cast, with the cast in the beginning, and then realizing that these words are powerful and they do hurt, but we need to show how much they hurt and why we don't need to say them. So I think just being very open with the cast about that, and having Kafui and I direct it together as a team, I think that helped a lot. You know, just having both of us up there and visually, you know, the idea that this play, you know, like Attica says, this case is about black and white, and the fact that the directors were black and white, that helps. That visually helped the kids also.
Well, they're all, you know, it's 21st century, man. Like, they're all visual learners. They learn by what mm-hmm. they see, you know?
So to see Kafui and I up there, and I did say in the program, I hope that the kids were benefited by seeing Kafui and I argue about things, the great where does the tire swing go debate of 2017, and, you know, kind of hash that out in front of them sometimes, and them kind of watch us do the process together. And, you know, one of us give in and one of us, you know, kind of thing. I think that helped them to watch two adults do that in a way that, you know, was never petty or mean or, you know, I think this, here's why, okay, we'll go with yours, you know, kind of thing. So.
No, I think, yeah, that's really important. Well, it's important to see compromise and, you know, standing up for your side in respectfully.
Right. Yeah. So I think that was fun for them to watch and, you know, take sides and who goes with Kafui on this? Who goes with Mrs. Marshall? So, yeah.
So it just feels like you spent a lot of time thinking about preparing, planning. What did anything happen that was, that kind of came out of the blue that was unexpected and then went and you kind of went, oh.
Oh, yes, there was. It was so funny. I had a great, lady work on our costumes, and oh, she ended up just being so fabulous. Usually when I was at the middle school, I had somebody help make the costumes, but I was kind of in charge of all of that, and she just kind of took over the costumes, and she's done costumes for this high school before, and so she brought a lot of stuff, and she did the measurements and trying on. It just took so much off my plate, but it ended up that three of my African-American girls that were spectators all ended up with light blue dresses, just, and I did not realize it until, because they tried on a bunch of things and put their names on the one that did the best, and they all tried on things different days, and I just did not realize it until the dress rehearsal that they were all in light blue dresses, and our first dress rehearsal, and, when I took photos, when I took cast photos, so about a week before the show, and, Kafui goes, why all the girls on this side in light blue dresses? And in a moment in my head, I said, they're all in the choir. They're in the choir. And he's like, did you just make that up? And I said, you'll never know. And so because they were in the choir, we decided, I started looking up 1935's spirituals, and I found Didn't My Lord Save Daniel from the Lion's Den? And I thought this would be the song the choir would be singing, because they think Tom Robinson is like Daniel in the Lion's Den. So we had our chorus teacher very quickly work with them at lunch one day, the pastor and the pastor's wife, Reverend Sykes, and his wife, and the three choir members. And so we had not had them before. When Reverend Sykes first walks across the stage to talk to Calpurnia about Tom Robinson, and just very quickly in the beginning, we had them walk behind him and sing. And it actually says in the script, again, I'm very textural, that the choir can be with him. And so I thought, well, if they're with him, they're probably singing. So, and he actually, they're supposed to be singing. Miss DuBose says, you must confine your singing to the colored church, Reverend Sykes. So I thought, well, there needs to be singing. I just never thought before, there needs to be singing. So they sang that and walked behind him, and they were so great. Bob Ewell walks across with Mayella, and they just kind of, very naturally, we had not blocked this, obviously, the first time they did it. And it's the week before the show. Just actually 3 days before the show. And they kind of scoot back and look down, and they just did a fantastic job. And so we added that because their costumes all were light blue. And
it was on purpose.
And it was
every second of it.
Every second of that.
Well, it's called being flexible. And it's like, okay, if that's what they are, then we need to make it purposeful.
Yes, and then they need to sing, and they were fantastic, because really their role was spectators before that, but then they became the choir, and then they sat together in the back, and it just gave them so much more character in that, because they're the choir behind, and they're just, you know, it really helped. It was one of those very serendipitous choices that happened near the end. And so I would say the good lesson from that is be open to that. Like, be open to it the week before going, I think they're the choir. So,
well, and it's a great example of how costume creates character.
Yes, very much so. And sometimes unintentionally.
No, purposeful. Oh, always purposeful.
Yes, yes, very purposefully. Very. I'm all about intention. Yes. Especially, yes. Yeah.
Yes. So what was the thing that you decided to become an expert on this production?
On this one, I think for me, it was marketing. I really worked very hard on marketing for this one. We ran a little campaign with it called Finch's Fight With Your Head Club, and used a great quote about, and our shows at Leon had never been highly attended. Our summer musical is, but not the straight plays during the year. And I really want Leon Theater to kind of have a name for itself. And so the Finch's Fight Club, we had law firms join at three levels, the Atticus, the Scout level, the Atticus level, or the free Tom Robinson $1,000 level. We did not have any free Tom Robinson $1,000 level. I was very sad about that. But we were able to raise almost $5,000 aside from the money that we got from people coming in to the show through that, through Finch's Fight Club.
Hold me socks. So did you just, and I just want, because I want to break this down just a little bit, because that is a huge amount of money. Did you send flyers? Did you send emails? How did you get the information into the law firm's hands?
I live in a capital city. We are,
lousy. You swimming with lawyers?
Yes. I won't say lousy with lawyers because they were great. They were great. So I gave the kids self-addressed stamped envelopes with, an envelope to give to a law firm, a lawyer that they knew. And it had, all the information about Finch's Fight Club. And the great quote about let's fight with our heads, start fighting with your heads, put your fist down, which I thought was great for, fear versus love. Let's fight with our heads. And then in there was the letter and how you could sign each, you could check off which level you wanted to be at and what you got for each level. And then there was an envelope that was addressed for our high school, Leon Theater, the address, and with a stamp on it. And so it was, and then, you got in our program. And so the kids each were tasked in my thespian troop, because we were also raising money to go to state. And my thespian troop were each tasked with handing out two of those letters to lawyers or, people that they knew. I also had them that weren't law specific. So in case you knew somebody else that you thought might join, and it wasn't law specific, but it was the same, join Finch's Fight With Your Head Club.
How many did
that
you,
came to me?
Yeah, how many went out?
Came to me at 2 a.m. in the morning. I was just worried about money, and I thought, Fight With Your Head Club, Fight Club. I would say probably over 100 went out.
That's awesome. Awesome. Okay, what else? What other marketing did you apply?
I have taken a big clue from PBS television, public television, and our shows are all free, like PBS. You can watch PBS for free, so you can come and see a show for free, but with a $5 donation. And let me tell you, this is also I don't have to write receipts. I hate writing receipts because you got to write a receipt or do this little ticket process at my school, and I can't be bothered with it. So, but with a $5 donation, I don't have to write a receipt for donations. With a $5 donation, you get an informative program. And that I take pictures of the cast and crew and have a little bio in there. Plus, I had my set design vision in there. And then something about why this play is important. A nice little program for $5. And then with a $10 donation, you get a program and you get to visit the concession stand during intermission. And my concessions were Makem's Southern Sweet Shop. And I had parents who had, donated Southern treats. And we had Calpurnia's lemonade and a quote about, how lemonade in the book, there's a quote about lemonade. So it was very much very like a Southern little potlucky kind of thing it looked like. So you got to go there. And then for $15, you could reserve your seat online in the VIP section. And we, for the first show for Friday night, we sold over 150 of those $15 ones ahead of time. And then for the second show, it was close to 100 of those VIP ones, and then had a lot of the 10. So we made $4,200 on the show itself.
That must make you feel amazing.
I do. I especially feel amazing because now we can take everybody we wanted to state, and we had the scholarship money. And so I can sleep at night because of that. So that does make me feel amazing. Like I said, the English classes very much encourage their kids to come and see it, their students. And you had to take a selfie with me or one of the cast members there, which is always fun. I feel like a star when they're going, I have to take a selfie with you so they can get extra credit. Or I had to sign a little paper or saying that they had been to the show. So, I got a lot of people coming because they were encouraged to come by their language arts teachers. So that helped us also.
Yeah. And it just means, it's encouraging cross-curricular. It's about community, right? Encouraging your entire school community to support each other.
Right. And I was in the middle of a set design unit, which plug, I'm writing for Theater Folk this summer. I was in the middle of teaching that set design unit. And so I walked all my theater students through the set design and talked to them about my concept because they're coming up with their own concepts for their little set design project. And so a lot of the kids that maybe in my theater class might have been kind of on the, I don't know if I'll go or not, really wanted to come because now they're kind of vested in the set design of it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Did you do anything that didn't work that you'd like to change for next time?
Oh, let me see. Anything that did not work that I'd like to change for next time. I needed to, and we did change it the next night. I needed to have two stations for the food. It got really backed up during the intermission that first night. Gosh, I haven't really thought about that. Anything that did not work. I felt like I wanted to go back and talk to the cast the second night before they went on stage. And I had some things written that I wanted to tell them, and it just never happened. It got crazy out front. And I am not a backstage director. I am I'm usually in the house. I'm usually in the back pacing during the show. And so I kind of let my stage manager handle the backstage stuff. And I wish I'd gone back and said something to them before the second show, before the second night, but I just never was able to make my way back there. So, I had some things I wanted to say, but you know, I sent it out in a text later. So
that's okay. I think it's not a bad thing to let your stage manager, take over when the show is on, that the show
right.
is on.
Yeah.
And then you're out front, you know, doing the lemonade. That's like, there's nothing wrong with that. Lee, this has been a lovely conversation. First of all my conversations with you, I love your energy and I love hearing your thought process. And this has just been a great conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time out.
Well, thank you. I always say that the closest thing to directing a show is having a baby. And I tell people all the time, and you feel like that last week you are in active labor. And so it's always nice because you always want everybody to come and see your baby and you want them to talk about your baby. So it's very fun to afterwards get to talk about my baby.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I think this is and when you just said that, I'm like, oh, that means you're in labor for a whole week. That sounds like fun.
I told an administrator once that at middle school when she asked me to do something that last week, like something extra. And I was like, I just want you to know that it's like, would you ask a woman have contractions to do that? A woman in the hospital with her legs up in the stirrups, would you ask her to do that? No, then don't ask me.
All right, everybody. That's Lee Marshall.
Is that going to be on the? Oh, great! So good.
No, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It is vivid and visual, just the way we want it to be, and we want it to be very, very important. That do not ask a drama teacher to do something that week of tech.
No. Yes, very much. So consider that even if they're a male, consider that they are in labor having contractions at that point. That's what administrators need to know.
Exactly so. Very cool. Thank you so much, Lee.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Lee. Before we go, let's do some theater folk news. Listen, are you doing one of our plays? Are you doing a theater folk play? We want to know about it. We want to hear about it. We want a picture. Send it to us. Are you working on a monologue for a competition or just in class? You know what I'm going to say. We want to hear about it. We want to know about it. Take a picture. Send it to us. Rehearsal videos, 30 seconds, not too long. Show us what you are doing in rehearsal in the classroom, because we want to brag about you. Send it to us at tfolk@theaterfolk.com so that we can do a production feature all about you. And finally, where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at tfolk.com, theaterfolk.com, and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can subscribe to the Drama Teacher Podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word theaterfolk. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.